Now, what is the problem of our churches and our temples? Do they have to disintegrate? Can't they help people anymore? Of course they can help people. They can help people by giving them these symbols. The rite, the ritual, is what counts in a religion. A ritual is an opportunity to participate in the archetypes of the soul. A ritual is a manifestation and organization of mythological symbols, and by participating in the rite, you participate in these symbols. Where the churches and synagogues go wrong is by telling you what the symbols mean. The main thing is that they should be there. Now look at what's happening in the Catholic Church. They had, past tense, one of the strongest, most magnificent ritual situations in the modern Western world. Now they have vulgarized it. They're translating it into English. Not very good English. It was in great Latin. And when you are in a church and this Latin comes out, and if you want to know what it means, it's on the other side of your prayer book, so what do you have to have it translated for? A person's notion of God is a function of his own spiritual magnitude. And so, just because everybody mentions the same name, I mean, the Christians all say Jesus and the Jews say Yahweh, no two of them have the same concept of God. They can't. There are different capacities there. So we have this total conflict and distinction. Now, having made that point, and I think I have, let me say a word about what you do positively to bring these things into action in your life. And I'll start by saying a word about the Indian methods and then try to show what we require that the Indian doesn't give. The great text of the Indian tradition, of course, is the Bhagavad Gita, and there four yogas are taught. Yoga simply means yoking the mind to the source of the mind, consciousness to the source of consciousness. And one yoga is the yoga simply of philosophizing. And this consists in distinguishing the subject of knowledge from the object of knowledge. I know my body. I am not my body. I'm the witness. I know my thoughts. I am not my thoughts. I'm the witness. I know my emotions. I am not my emotions. I am the witness. With that, you can drive yourself out the back of the room. And then the Buddha comes along with one more blow. He says, there's no witness either. That's the way of jnana, as it's called, or philosophizing. Then there's the way of a sort of psychological gymnastics, that yoga where you sit in the lotus posture and breathe in through your right nostril and hold, and out through your left, and then in through the left and hold, all this kind of business. Awaking the kundalini energy of the psyche and bringing it up and all that. This is an exercise, a kind of psychological exercise that brings about transformations of your psychological character. Then there's another kind of yoga which corresponds to our worship. It's the yoga of devotion. You live with devotion to some being who amounts to your God. Now, an old lady came in to see Ramakrishna one day, and she said, Master, I find I don't love God. I just have to admit it to myself, I don't love God. That was a very good religious act. And he said, well, is there anything you love at all? She said, I love my little nephew. He says, there you are, in your service to your nephew, that's your God. This goes back to a story of Krishna with the cowherds. They're going to have a ceremony of worship to worship the Lord of heaven. He says, that's not your God. Worship your cows. That's where your devotion is. That's what you honestly revere. Worship your cows. There are 5 degrees of worship. The first is that of servant to master. Oh Lord, you are the master, I am your servant, tell me what to do and I'll do it. That's the norm for religious attitudes. The second is the attitude of friend to friend. Oh Lord, you are my friend. That's the attitude, for instance, of the apostles to Jesus. That's the attitude of Arjuna and the Pandavas to Krishna when he was among them. This is a higher degree of religious capacity. The third is the level of parent to child, where the God is the child. That's the mood of the Christmas crib. That's the mood of taking care of your little nephew. That's the mood of cultivating this little infant, which is your concept of divinity, and bringing it to adulthood and fulfillment. The fourth love is the love of husband for wife and wife for husband. This is the way of the nun who wears the ring of her devotion to Christ. It's the way of husband and wife, or it properly should be. And then what would the fifth and highest form be? The highest form of love is illicit love. With illicit love, you have sacrificed the reputation that you have in society. You have sacrificed your place. You have sacrificed your virtue. You have sacrificed everything for love. And as Ramakrishna says, if you love God that way, you can say, God, I've given up everything for you. Now come through and show yourself. And he says, he'll do it. Or he says, she'll do it. Because God can be either male or female. I mean, to think of God as finally, even in the world of biology, sex doesn't come along until about 10 billion years after life gets started. So this little quibble as to whether you think of God as male or female is, doesn't count. So these are the loves. And then there's finally the great way of action. This is the great yoga of the Gita. When Arjuna is about to engage in battle, is about to initiate a battle, he has the god drive him between the battle lines, and when he sees the men whom he admires on the two sides and realizes he's about to precipitate a battle and their deaths, he drops his bow and he says, better that I should die here than that I should initiate this battle. And Krishna says, whence this ignoble cowardice? What's the matter with you? Don't you know that you are a noble, that protection of justice and virtue is your function? Don't you know that those lives are mere phenomenal apparitions and that you can't do anything that I haven't already done? And then Krishna shows himself as the Lord of the world with those two armies flying into his mouth and crashing like grapes over his tusks. He has many arms, many heads. He's suddenly transformed into a monster. And Arjuna's hair rising, he says, who are you? And he says, I am black time. Come here for the annihilation of these armies. Get in there and do what has been done, seem to be doing. Perform your duty.